Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Monday, January the 23rd. As we like to do on Mondays, we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots of things going on in New York, lots of things going on in different places around the country, especially in the home of the current president, President Biden. We keep finding documents here and there, so a lot to get into, plus our friend, former Vice President Al Gore, put on quite a performance at Davos over in Switzerland, where they all get together, I guess, once a year or whatever. So let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. How are you, Bill?
Reasonably well, Silvio. How about you?
Absolutely great. Always enjoy hearing from you. And I thought maybe we could begin today, Bill, if you could give us an update of what's happening in beautiful New York City, where apparently they've had some problems at the hotels, Bill.
Well, yeah, I guess they have. I actually, you know, this is I don't live in New York. I live about 20 miles north of New York, but New York City is my city home in a way. And, you know, what is remarkable here is New York, like many other liberal cities, declared itself a sanctuary city. It was such a great moment. We are a sanctuary city. Come to us if you are an illegal immigrant, because we don't think you're illegal, and we will welcome you here. Well, apparently, when they declared themselves a sanctuary city, they never seriously thought that anybody would come. I mean, it was one of those typical liberal moments. You declare yourself a liberal city, and then you go to a cocktail party and announce that you've just declared yourself a liberal city, and you get twice the number of drinks. And that's kind of typical of New York. So they declared themselves a sanctuary city. And then when the Biden administration came in and opened the borders and created this enormous problem, suddenly they realized that had implications. So so many of the immigrants have come to New York. They sometimes land in another city, but they find a way to get here. Because after all, if you're an illegal immigrant, the first thing you'd want to do is go to see The Sound of Music, right? I mean, that's what anybody would do. So they come to New York.
Or West Side Story. You know, West Side Story would be the other one. You might have seen that movie back home.
Yes, absolutely. And they would want to know where it was shot. And they came, and there were no facilities for them at all. I mean, no New York City hotel was set up for illegal immigrants. You know, there were no deals, there were no package deals. Come across the border, you know, we'll take you. So what they did was they put other hotels, luxury hotels, literally, in service, including one in Times Square, which is quite a famous hotel and where many people come if they're coming into New York as tourists to see the Broadway shows. And it turned out that many of the illegal immigrants really didn't care for these hotels. First of all, they thought the food was terrible. It wasn't their food. It was somebody else's food. And they were throwing food out the window and having fights among themselves. You know, I don't mean to demean these people. They came across the border for a reason, most probably for work. And I think we should realize that their plight was created by other people. They didn't create their own tragedy. They came across the border. Okay, they got into New York. They're stuck in these hotels, which in ordinary times would be luxury hotels, but they have no jobs. They have no access to jobs. I don't know if they give them any counseling, but they're here. There have been a number of fights within the hotels. A couple of nights ago, there was a gunfight. And if I were a liberal New Yorker, I'd say, how exciting. I mean, if they're going to have a gunfight, let them have it here where we can take good care of them.
I'm surprised nobody in the city council thought maybe we need gun control
They would say, you know, it's really too bad that gun manufacturers, they're so irresponsible. They sell guns to these people. It's not their fault. This is a socioeconomic problem. And only if we only had the courage to ban guns, this would never happen. And what is amazing about this is there is really no plan to improve the condition of these people. The mayor has been pretty open about it. I think his mayoralty is pretty much almost over in its first year, and I can't blame him completely. The state is not really helping. The federal government is certainly not helping. He is stuck with the state legislature that thinks this is just fine. This is what we're about. The Democratic Party in New York is very far to the left. They refer to Joe Stalin as that old conservative. You know, that's the kind of...
Right. That's right.
The Democratic Party we have here. So the problem is not being solved. At the same time, the city's economy is weakening. A lot of businesses are leaving town or are going broke. The mayor has made that point. He said New York is in a recession. I'm glad he had the courage to say what others did not say. And he said we need help. There's no help coming. There really isn't.
Yeah, it is really a sad story because, many of these people were brought here. They paid to come here, so they have a debt, you know, and they owe somebody money for coming here because they weren't brought over for free. We know that by the people who are bringing them over. They're charging them money, so how are they going to collect that money? I don't know. But when I hear about these people staying in hotels, Bill, it makes me laugh a little bit. It makes me cry, too, because – when our family came here, and we came here legally, we stayed in one hotel one night. And that was when we got to Wisconsin, the church that had sponsored us put us in a motel, not a hotel. And they put us up, all five of us, in a motel. Very nice place. Nobody was complaining. And then, of course, the next day they had already made plans and arrangements to get my father to work, so that he would support the family. And also they helped us get into an apartment so that we would, you know, live in our own place and pay the rent and so on. So when I see these people, I feel like, you know, this is a joke, a tragedy. I mean, who thinks they're helping these people by doing what they're doing, Bill?
Well, that's the thing here, that this is so typical of left-wing politics. They're exploiting them. They're not helping them. It is like very much like the so-called court reform that cities have gone through in recent years, the woke cities, where they have lessened the penalties for certain crimes. They have made it easier for a person arrested to get out of prison without posting bail. And they think this is serving these people. It's making it more equitable. It's not. It's just prolonging their agony. That's all there is. Now, I don't know what happens to these illegal immigrants. The fact of the matter is there are more jobs available in the United States right now than people to fill them. Now, you would think that if the administration is going to demand that they be allowed to stay here, that they would get to work and try to match a job to each illegal immigrant. But they just don't care. They really don't care. And also the fact that the immigrants are illegal might very seriously compromise or complicate any attempt to get a job. Some jobs may require citizenship. Some school systems may not take a child who is from another country and can't speak the language. I'm not familiar with all the details of all the areas, but they have created, the administration has created an absolute nightmare at the border. The city of El Paso, from what I read, is almost near collapse. And they make it plain they don't care. And we have this fool vice president. That's supposed to be her job. Immigration is supposed to be her main job. She went to the border once, I think. I believe she spent a lot of time asking where the Ralph Lauren was and the hairdresser. And that was it. I mean, she goes back and she starts making these speeches about everything else. But I don't know where this is going to end, because this is approaching the level of a real tragedy. And now
well,
with
yes. No, you're exactly right.
Absolutely.
And in fact, there is a city in Arizona, Bill, Yuma, Arizona, that
Yuma.
is completely collapsed. It's in the state of Arizona, and the city, in fact, there's a big headline today in one of the big news stories about how the city simply does not have the resources. I mean, they're overwhelmed. Their hospitals, they simply cannot handle the people. And that's Yuma, Arizona. I'm not exactly sure how big of a city that is, but, you know, it's not a small town either. So they're not helping. The tragedy here is that they're not helping these individuals. The way to help them is to say to them, look, go back to your country, apply legally, and then when you come in, you don't have to go through any of this, because you'll come in legally, and with that legal document, you'll be able to work. So you're not going to be a burden for anybody. You'll be on your feet as soon as you get here. Well, that's the way our family came, and that's the way 99% of the Cubans came that way, with a few exceptions, I know, but that's the best way to come, Bill. Not this way. Bring them over and then drive them to New York and hope that they can put them up in a hotel. It's horrible what they're doing to these people, as well as to the
city. Oh, absolutely. Well, all they're doing is exploiting them, just using them. And they have these news films. I love them. I absolutely love them. You can watch them every night. And they want the local television stations, who, of course, are woke, will have a news team greeting the buses. The buses come in. They're actually very good buses, and they come in and people get off, and there's a city greeting committee. I'm not kidding you. People whose job is to greet the illegal immigrants and tell them in any number of languages. I think they must speak between 50 and 100 languages each, and they tell them how welcome they are here and that they are going to be given a briefing and taken to a nice warm home. They keep on repeating the same scene, not realizing that people at home knows the whole thing is a fraud and that this is a catastrophe. Now, I don't know what the crime rate is among illegal immigrants. Apparently, that is one aspect where there may have been some bad incidents, and every incident, any crime incident is bad, but the crime rate has not soared. I think these are mostly people who really are looking for an opportunity, doing it the wrong way, but when you see them marching along the roads coming to the United States, they're pretty well dressed, and I think many of them are just unfortunate.
Right.
I don't think you could just assume that if you walk past that hotel, you're going to be accosted. There
no.
may be some bad stuff going on, but the real criminals, the ones we're proud of, are the local people. They're the one. I mean, you know, but, I mean, the crime in New York is bad. It's bad in the subways, but those are the people. Those are the New Yorkers. They know how to commit a crime. I mean,
right,
not like
exactly.
The amateurs, you know, from the other cities. But it's you look at America now and you kind of wonder, in the embassies in Washington along Massachusetts Avenue, what notations, what observations they're sending back to their home countries about the condition of the United States, what they see. Because Washington is worse than New York.
Washington is a terrible state.
Washington,
the city of Washington, also has a problem, too, which I read about today, that the mayor is telling the president, these people got to come back to work at the office because my city is like dead. They're, you know, and of course, you know, when people stay home at, you know, when they do their work from home, then all these restaurants and all these coffee shops and these buildings, they don't have work. So, I mean, it's a terrible situation. No, I just think that these poor people are being exploited. And they're being used, the immigrants, that is. Most of them, the ones that I've had the opportunity to meet, you get the two extremes, actually. You get the very poorly educated, very low-skilled type person who just wants a job. I mean, whatever you give them, they'll take. And then you have
the other
extreme, and this is typical of the ones coming from Venezuela, who are extremely well-educated. They're professionals. They're bankers.
Yes.
They're lawyers. Now, they will work. They will work if you give them a job. But, you know, obviously they're overqualified. But, I mean, they'll do whatever. So these people are willing to work. But the way we're doing it is just completely wrong. And I don't know, Bill, when are the citizens of New York going to explode? Because these benefits and all this money is being spent on these visitors at the expense of whatever they're supposed to get, Bill.
Absolutely. They're cutting the budget in New York. I don't know what's going to happen to the schools. I don't know what's going to happen to – I think that the children of the illegals are enrolled in the schools. They're permitted to be in New York City. I don't know about other areas. But these are kids who don't speak English. They need additional help, which they deserve. They're only children. And I don't know if they're getting that. You know, we have had situations somewhat similar to this before. At the beginning of World War II, when they were drafting so many people into the Army had to take over hotels in Miami Beach and use them as barracks. I mean, we know something about housekeeping in the United States government, but you get the feeling they know nothing about anything right now.
Right.
I mean, there has to be some program. After the Second World War, we had people called DPs in Europe, displaced persons. And they set them up at camps. The camps originally, as they were set up, were not adequate, and it was generalized. Now, who went through the camps himself to inspect them and found them so inappropriate, but they immediately improved them. They had at least a commanding officer who cared about the situation. And what many of the organizations did, after the war, a lot of organizations were formed to take care of war refugees. And there was one called ORT, Organization of, I think it was Organization of Rehabilitation Through Training. And they took these displaced people, no matter what condition they were in, and they put them to work, any job, cutting the lawns. They had doctors cutting lawns, but they said work is what counts at a time like this. As you said about people, they will take any job. Many of the people coming from Latin America will take any job, the ones who are unskilled, and they will do a good job.
Work hard. I mean,
they work very hard. We have
you see that in construction, you see that in hotels, you see that everywhere, but there has to be work, and the biggest challenge they face particularly is the challenge of language.
Absolutely.
And it's hard for them to, I mean, my parents went through that, you know, having to struggle
the
language and all of that. I mean, but again, it was done in a more orderly way, not in this chaotic way of just bringing people here and, you know, taking them in New York because, as you were indicated, they want to be popular with the liberals at the cocktail parties.
Oh, that's
it. But look
it.
What they're
oh,
doing.
Boy.
Look what they're doing to their city. But I want to mention something. You mentioned New York and the state of the city. And, you know, there was a very famous marketing campaign for New York. You know, I love New York. And I love, by the way, I thought that was a great marketing campaign.
Oh, absolutely.
I
love New York.
Yeah, it was a great marketing campaign. But I think today they would call it I Leave New York because
that's right.
People are leaving. And, you know, Bill, it doesn't make me happy to say that because I hate to see what is being done to New York, one of the greatest cities in the world, a city that 99% of the world identifies as the city of the United States. When you mention New York, everybody knows where that is. I mean, if you say Dallas, they're not sure. But if you say New York, everybody knows where New York is. And the image
right.
of New York, everybody knows it. The Empire State Building, the bridges, everything about New York, everybody knows. And so it really breaks my heart to see what they're doing to the city, Bill. I mean, I'm surprised that the local politicians are not screaming of what is being done to their city, Bill.
Well, Mayor Adams is. He's the one who is. The others, I don't know. I have not heard the latest wisdom from Lori Lightfoot in Chicago. She's apparently now she's running for reelection, having been one of the worst mayors in America, and she's in fourth place. I don't think she will be reelected. I think it's going to be a better person this time. But many of the mayors, I think, have just thrown up their hands in dismay. They don't get the help they need. They do the best they can. But, you know, given the past of this country, as a country of immigrants, we do know how to do things. We really do. I recall in the early 90s when President Clinton ended welfare as we know it. That was the phrase that was used. We're going to end welfare as we know it. They've forced people to get jobs. You know, people who were on welfare and were able-bodied, they forced them to get jobs. There are jobs available. Jobs can also be created. I mean, just, you know, jobs even cleaning the streets. It's honorable work. And you must put people to work. You must get them into training courses of some kind. We have loads of people in America who speak Spanish, who can speak to them. In the Army, for God's sake, they have people, they have translators. But I don't know what's happened to us as a country. Well, one of the things that happened, of course, was the pandemic. And it did disrupt a lot of things. It did disrupt a lot of social services. And people were afraid to even go into a room with other people. So that, I agree, created a problem that was unique to this generation. But right now, it should be a well-oiled machine. But the fact of the matter is the Biden administration has lied to us. They said the border was sealed. It is not sealed, not by a long shot. I don't recall what the figures were from the last weekend, but apparently they were the highest in American history, right, of people coming across the border. Among them, without any question, some who are on the terrorist watch list. And those are only the ones on the terrorist watch list. How about other people coming through who don't have that honor to be on the terrorist watch list, but are terrorists? You know,
right. How about the people who would love to be on the terrorist list? They just have never done a terrorist act before, so they're waiting for their first opportunity. You know,
right? I mean, I have a relative recently, just a couple of weeks ago, who went to Mexico for a vacation, and I asked him for his flight back, and he gave it to me, and I said, "Why are you taking a flight back to where you live? Why don't you just walk up to the border? There are some certain benefits. You're ignoring the benefits. I mean, why take a flight back and have to pay for it?" I meant it in jest, of course, but in a way, it's serious. I think that the lack of any real imagination, the lack of any interest, and to a certain extent, I also blame the press, because they have tried to soften this to help Biden. It can't be softened. It's a terrible situation.
Right. No, that's it. They've tried to protect Biden by not covering this situation on the border correctly. It's been a mess. This situation on the border, it's been a mess for some time. And I feel bad for the people who are being brought over.
Absolutely.
You know, I mentioned before, they paid to get over here. This is not a free ride.
No, they pay the cartels.
They pay somebody. I mean, they're paying somebody to get over here. Cartels, criminal elements, whoever they're paying, but they're paying, because I've talked to people about this.
Yes.
And they've told me, you know, how they pay. Usually they drive them up to, like, within two or three blocks of the fence or the border. And, you know, it's like, okay, here you are. Good luck. You know, just go over there and tell them that you want to get in for whatever reason. And they've got the whole script. I mean, it's all, you know, it's a science how to get into the country. But It, by the way, you mentioned Lori Lightfoot. One of the things she mentioned at a recent debate, I believe, is that to reduce the crime, that what the merchants need to do is stop taking cash. She literally said that. So I have a really good friend from Chicago who grew up in Chicago who goes to our church. So I saw him on Sunday, and I said, "Well, did you hear the latest from Lori Lightfoot?" So I told him, and he goes, "Well, I have a feeling that what the merchants in my old city are going to do is they're going to have a gun with them when they're out in the streets selling whatever they're selling, because they're going to be protecting themselves." But she's such a lousy mayor. At least the guy in New York is trying, Bill. At least he's trying.
Yes.
Or at least he puts on a good act. But, man, it is absolutely incredible what's happening to the city of New York. I don't know how many more people can leave, because I don't know if these people are coming back. And they're like you've indicated before, they're killing Broadway. They're killing the you know, the big things that you associated with New York. And I don't know how you put it back, Bill, once you destroy it like this.
I don't know either. You know, people say, oh, New York always springs back. This is a very different situation. It's a 1-2 punch, the pandemic and the illegal immigration. New York and California have become the largest out-migration states in the country. California is probably in even worse shape than New York State. What's amazing is about Manhattan and the craziness of New York is throughout all this horror, the real estate prices have gone up.
Right.
The same thing is true of San Francisco. It may tell you something about the people who live there, you know?
Right.
But
who's buying it, whether these people are buying it from other countries, I mean, from overseas.
That's right. That's exactly right.
I mean, whether this, you know, these are investors from other countries who are just dumping the money in New York because they'd rather have it in New York than back in China, for example.
That's absolutely correct. We have these high towers being built. They're square, and they each apartment is like $50 million or $75 million or something like that, and nobody lives in them.
Right.
They just are buildings empty, but the city, as a city, is going through a period of terrible destruction, and I don't see a route back. I just don't see a route back, and that is the sad thing. It is losing people, New York City, by the thousands, and I don't know who replaces those people, and I don't know who replaces the small businesses that are going out of business.
Well, nobody does.
No.
Nobody does, Bill. I think what happens is those businesses disappear. They move out of town, too. They take those businesses somewhere else, and let's see what happens. I don't feel good for New York. I think New York is in a real mess right now. Let's take a little break, Bill, and when we come back, we got a lot more to talk about documents and Davos and a few other things as well. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, I was going to mention that if you come across the Supreme Court leaker, would you mind telling us at Urgent Agenda?
Isn't that something? You know,
it is.
Somebody made the point, they didn't even call on the FBI, which has real investigative techniques. This was not a serious investigation. The people who are in the establishment don't care who the leaker is, and I think they were afraid that if the leaker turned out to be one of the clerks for one of the liberal justices, it would hurt the image of the liberal justices. I can't believe this was a serious investigation. It should be a serious investigation because what the individual did was criminal. And terrible,
right.
and a breach of the legal system, but I think we've heard the last of that subject. You know,
my reaction to it, Bill. If you're at one of the justices, you know that I've always felt that these justices require confidentiality because a lot of what they do is they're sharing opinions in private. Okay,
yes, they
are. So they're telling each other something that may or may not be the final product. But it's part of the thought process to the final product. So that, you know, we're sitting there talking and you may say to me something about abortion or not abortion, but Roe v. Wade. And I say something and somebody else says something. And we're basically disagreeing among ourselves in an intellectual way. But it's all being done privately. But now, if I'm, you know, let's say Justice Thomas, am I really going to tell somebody what I think? Because what I think may be in the newspaper the next day, Bill, and a private conversation may very well be in the newspaper the next day. So I think it does a lot of harm to the the bonding between these justices, Bill.
Absolutely. They have to have trust in each other.
Yes.
There's an old expression, never say anything in Washington that you don't want to be on the New York front page of the New York Times the next day, because it will be if you're important enough. I think the court has been damaged. I think the trust among the justices has been damaged. I don't think that there are too many people in the country who care, unfortunately. And, we're awaiting new decisions. I see there's a new motion picture out smearing Justice Kavanaugh. They're still on Justice Kavanaugh. I mean, they're still on Justice
Amazing.
Kavanaugh. And you're looking at a country, the United States of America right now, a country in real decline. It really
mm-hmm.
is. And I read something yesterday, I think it was in Politico, where they were trying to restore our confidence, saying all over the world, people see the wisdom of what America is doing. And our prestige is rising. I have not noticed this. I really haven't. I have not noticed this.
I'd love to know who the source of that story was.
Probably the guy who wrote it. You know, it's
that's right, or either somebody in the White House trying to change the subject.
Yes. People have new respect. I'm sure every time Kamala Harris visits one of these countries, respect for the United States soars right to the top. Just listening to her eloquence. I mean,
well, my goodness,
she forgot
the Declaration of Independence yesterday, Bill.
That's right. She was
down giving a speech about Roe v. Wade, and she talks about liberty and happiness, I guess, and forgot the other part about life. I guess it wasn't convenient. That didn't fit in with her speech, which I thought, was so over the top. My goodness, it is the Declaration of Independence, just quoted correctly. Amazing.
Yes.
Bill.
Well, that is what we're facing right now, and it's a very, very bad situation. We have an election next year. Maybe people don't realize it's next year. The campaign has already begun. It is remarkable how some Republicans have gotten out of the gate to put themselves in the position where they're known or known again or reminded of. Nikki Haley did an interview. Mike Pompeo is clearly going to be in the race. The big question in terms of the future of the United States and the next election is, will Donald Trump run? And will Joe Biden run? I don't think we're sure of anything right now.
Right.
If Joe
That's
Biden
right.
doesn't run, I don't know what they're going to do with Kamala Harris. It's on the one hand, I don't think anybody really takes her seriously. But on the other hand, you can't deny her the nomination. Because she's the vice president.
I know.
And the Republican
Republican
Party is so filled with talent. It really is. It has a really deep bench.
I agree. I agree with that. I mean, you've got governors. I mean, the other day I keep looking at governors because everybody's talking about DeSantis, and Youngkin, and those are great governors. But I thought of two more governors on that list. Governor Kemp of Georgia and Governor from Tennessee. I forgot his name. The two who are doing a great job and who would be just absolutely great candidates. I mean, they're well spoken. They've done a good job. And honestly, our own Governor Abbott here in Texas is also doing a great job. I don't know whether he wants to do it, but I see so many, like you say, so much talent on our side that it's absolutely incredible. Well, a couple of issues, Bill, I wanted to get into. I want to get into the documents, and I want you to put yourself in the place of a movie critic and tell me what you thought of Al Gore and John Kerry at Davos. How would you rate their performances, Bill?
Well, I would rate that. It depends on what newspaper I was writing for. If I was writing for the New York Times, I would rate their performances as vigorous and scholarly, speaking to an educated audience and doing America proud. If I was writing for a real newspaper, I would say they were both public embarrassments. I mean, when Gore was screaming and yelling and banging and on the table, I mean, I don't know what his problem was, because he was certainly among friends, and Kerry, of course, you know, probably flew in on a private jet and was certainly among friends who support him and understand the fact that if we don't do something about global warming, the world will come to an end next Tuesday. I think they put a date on it. You know, isn't it interesting, by the way, in terms of that and Davos, which is really just a bunch of snobs who really believe they're better than other people and they should pronounce for the world. But isn't it interesting that we're seeing now a reverse in the feelings about electric cars, that people are becoming more skeptical? I think it's amazing. Finally, people are starting to ask real questions about these so-called miracle cars that are going to save the earth from these pigs who drive them. We now realize that electric cars have to be charged every night, and you're going to have tens of millions of cars each night in the United States being charged, and nobody has asked the question until recently, where is the electricity going to come from?
That's right. I mean, you already have places that have brownouts in California. They were telling people not to charge their cars because they couldn't there's also, by the way, some environmental issues with the battery too. Some people are concerned about that, but I thought it was kind of funny that Kerry and Al Gore, of course, John Kerry and Al Gore, the one thing they have in common, well, two things, I guess, their craziness, but also that they were defeated by George W. Bush. I just thought that was kind of funny. Bush must be wondering, what did I do to the world when I defeated these two people, Bill?
Well, it's true. But I think that I am hoping that we will have at least enough responsible news organizations to take a good hard look on what we are spending on climate change, because I just have a feeling that we're looking at the scam of the century, that we're going to spend
trillions.
Well,
certainly the spending. You're right. I agree with you.
I think we're going to force people to buy electric cars, and we're going to find that they don't improve the air at all, that for everything you gain, you lose something somewhere else. You mentioned a very important subject, and that is the batteries are extremely toxic, very toxic. And if I were State Farm right now, I'd say, what will it cost us if two cars with those batteries collide and the stuff is all over the streets? What's that going to cost State Farm? We learned recently, amazing how many years it took a newspaper to finally say it, that in very cold weather, the efficiency of the batteries goes way down, and you may only get 50 miles on your charge. Now, you talk about people trying to get to work in a cold city like Minneapolis, to the extent that anyone still works in Minneapolis. But the people who do, trying to get to work, or people trying to get to hospitals in emergencies, and their car just conks out because of the cold. It has not been thought through. We also, as you know, heard recently that many of the people in the automobile industry are absolutely negative on electric cars, and not for the reasons of their own careers, but because they know what the problems are.
Well, I think Toyota came out, and the organization Toyota came out and said something about electric cars. I think the biggest problem with the electric car right now is the cost of an electric car.
I
think the second problem is the fact that, like you say, they have to be charged every night. And that means that every night you got your little generator running, charging. And if you multiply that by 10 million people, let's say here in North Texas, that's a lot of electricity that we're not using. I mean, where's it going to come from? So, you know, it means you have to improve your power grid and all kinds of things that go with it. But the last thing I wanted to say about Al Gore, you know, Al Gore has such a history of making good predictions, Bill. I mean, if we had followed Al Gore, my goodness, I thought we were supposed to be dead by now, or certainly the major cities would have been already overblown, drowning with all the water coming down from the North Pole, Bill, from the North Bill.
Well, I advise people taking apartments in New York City. Anything you take must be above the 20th floor because
right.
the top 19 are going to be all flooded, and you have to have a good boat. You just have to have a good boat. I mean, people
right.
believe this stuff. They really do. You know, if we were to – I want an estimate. I would love to see some network that is serious, and boy, are they rare, do an estimate of what we would happen and what will happen in the world if we did nothing, absolutely mm-hmm. nothing. I would love to see what real scientists and real planners say. And I would imagine it is very different from what Al Gore is saying.
Well, Al Gore has made so many predictions. I can understand him being wrong the first time, but he shouldn't get all this credibility for all the predictions that he's made. Well, Bill, our last topic of the day is the topic of the country, and that is documents. I assume you don't have any in your home. I'm sure you've looked everywhere to see if you have any in your home. I looked in my trunk and I didn't have any, so I'm okay. I don't have any documents, but who knows where the next documents come from. But this is completely crazy. It makes me wonder, Bill, and that's what I wanted to get your reaction on. If the Attorney General had known in August that he was going to have a document problem with the President or President Biden, would he have sent the FBI to President Trump's home? I don't think so. Because I don't think so either. Yeah, I think the Attorney General must have been caught here off guard by all of this, which then leads me to my next point, and again, just to get your reaction to this, that is that maybe something happened in August or September that led people to those documents. The speculation I hear, and I underline speculation, it's all that it is that it may have something to do with Hunter Biden. That
yes.
They're investigating Hunter Biden, and it's possible that he maybe he directed them to those documents. And again, that's just pure speculation, but it's as good as anything I've heard. But
there is
just
a lot of
Let me have your reaction to this, because I don't know where to go with this anymore, Bill.
I got two notes from readers last night, both with the same speculation that this is a plot within the Democratic Party to get rid of Biden. Now, I have no proof of that. I really don't. But there are people who want him out in the Democratic Party. The far left wants him out. And there are people who say, look, the guy practically doesn't know where he is. We have to figure out a way to embarrass him and get him out of office where he can't run again, or put him into a situation where he can't run again. Now, that is pure speculation. I have no idea how they found out about these documents. As far as the documents themselves, look, we don't know what's in them. They could have been high-level documents. They could have been low-level documents. It is clear that both Biden and Trump should have turned them over when their administrations ended, in the case of Biden, his vice presidential administration. And there is great embarrassment. And what's interesting is how new documents turn up all the time. Now, again, these may be very low-level documents that he was reading and took home or whatever. But the remarkable thing is that the story has gotten so large. I mean, if you had a situation where a president was found to have had some documents and didn't realize, or claims he didn't realize he had them, and returns them immediately, there probably would have been no story here. I doubt if there would have been a story about Biden unless there was a story about Trump. I mean, I think it was the fact that once this happened with Trump and he was found to be in possession of illegal possession of documents, that the press, even the press in its current form, felt some obligation to give at least the pretense of a hard time to Joe Biden, because otherwise they would really look terrible. But
right.
so far, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. They want to indict Trump. We know that there are efforts underway to indict Trump for a number of things. Whether that will happen, I don't know. There are state investigations in New York, federal investigations in Virginia and in Washington. If they indict Biden, would they then go ahead with the prosecution of if they indict Trump, rather, would they then go ahead with an investigation of Biden? I mean, that could, if it goes far enough, that could involve them in a decision as to whether indict the whether to indict the president.
Right. Well, no. Everything is possible because there's so many different ways it can go. But I just believe very seriously that if the attorney general had known in August that he was going to have a problem with Biden documents, he would not have sent the FBI into Mr. Trump's home.
Probably true.
But my other point, Bill, I was reading about this, this office or this place that keeps track of these archives. And when this was created back in the late 70s, it was kind of, there was some concern about documents and they wanted to have documents, at least know where the documents were. But there was never any idea that they would be going after presidents legally or sending the FBI to them or anything like that. But that's the overreach of this administration, that if they had just kept negotiating with Trump, they would have figured something out. They would have reached some kind of an accommodation. But I think they went too far when they sent the FBI. Now they have to treat Biden the same. Otherwise, the anger in the country is going to be tremendous. And then, of course, there was the case of Hillary Clinton when nothing happened to her. That's also part of the mix going on here. And Go ahead. No, go ahead, because I want to make another point. Go ahead, please.
The Hillary thing might come up again, especially if she makes any moves to run. I hope so, too.
I hope so, too, because she clearly violated. She violated State Department norms and how she did things. But the one person, Bill, in this whole story who's been awfully silent is President Obama. And I say awfully silent because the documents that they found in President Biden's office or Corvette or whatever, those documents actually belong to President Obama, Bill.
That's right. They're from the Obama administration.
Yes.
Well, I find it interesting that Obama is so silent on so many things. he has made a fortune since leaving office. It's embarrassing. He has monetized the American presidency as no one ever has. And yet he has very little to say about real issues, except for the fact that, and this was repeated in some things I read over the weekend, it is widely believed that he is really manipulating Biden on foreign policy, and that the foreign policy of the United States right now is actually Obama's foreign policy. That would not surprise me. And it would not surprise me if he is advocating policies that in the end will hurt the United States. But Obama is a mystery who continues to be a mystery. We really still, this number of years after his presidency, don't know that much about him. But he is very much in the background. His hand-picked guy is running negotiations with Iran, which is a terrible mistake, an absolutely awful mistake. But, yes, I would like to know the involvement of Joe Biden in a number of stories.
Well, also, Bill, I would like to know, this office of archives or whatever it's called, I would like to know why they had such a sense of urgency in negotiating with President Trump, but had absolutely no urgency in negotiating for these documents that they found. I mean, these documents had to be, there had to be a list somewhere that said this document is missing, this document is missing, and they've been missing for quite a few years from the Obama administration. So I would love to know if anybody was contacting President Obama, maybe not him directly, but the staff or somebody saying, hey, look, by the way, we're still missing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Do you know where they are? Have any idea of where these documents are? Do you have them? Did you give them to somebody? Seems to me that phone call or that letter was never sent, Bill. And that
raises a question of
politicizing these agencies, Bill.
Well, I think that's one of the big stories of our time, the way the United States government has been politicized. We know, because it has been studied, that the great majority of people in the civil service are Democrats. I think that there have been laws on the books, the Hatch Act and others, to try to keep the civil service from becoming politicized, but I'm not so sure that legislation is working these days. We hear all kinds of stories about actions taken by the administration or by some other branch of government that suddenly disappear inside the executive branch. And I think it is a very serious problem, because when we elect public officials, we elect them to pursue the policies that they were elected to mm-hmm. pursue. And when you have the government so politicized, people elect a public official, and that public official gets absolutely nowhere.
Right. No, I mean, this is, to me, the one of the stories of this whole document story is the sense of urgency. You know, you have one president, they're sending the FBI out to pick up documents, and yet documents are missing for years on this side, and there doesn't seem to be the same urgency. And that's a question that I like to see that pursued. I like to see somebody from that agency come before the House and answer that question, Bill. I said, well, why, just to ask that, because I'm curious about the answer, Bill.
So am I. And what's happening right now, as you know, in Washington, is the Republicans in the House are getting organized and mm-hmm. forming their investigations. And they will have the power of subpoena and
right.
other powers that they haven't had in the minority. And maybe we'll get some answers. On the other hand, maybe we'll just get some stonewalling. You know, I've noticed, I'm sure you have too, that there are beginning to be some murmurs in the Republican Party of discontent that the members of the House, who are in the majority now, will not go far enough, that they'll be the typical Republican congressmen who are so polite they never get anything done. And I'm beginning to see a little of that in a few areas, but I'm also beginning to see some real fight in many members of the Republican Party. They have to fight for the next election. They didn't fight for this last one, where they were expected to win by such a large margin. I mean, the Republicans historically have a kind of a lackadaisical attitude about winning elections and about victory over issues. And I think that those who are arguing now for a change at the Republican National Committee and the chair, I think are wise to say we have got to do better and we have got to learn how to fight elections through to victory. So
I think you're exactly right about that. I am optimistic. I know it's early, but I am optimistic, especially with Jim Jordan. I think he's going to get things done. But there's a lot to do. There's a lot to do. So I think a challenge that they have right now is picking the fights, because you cannot investigate everything.
Yes.
Pretty soon,
that's right,
you don't get anything done. So you got to pick one or two things. And then fight for those, and hopefully you get some answers about this or that. Well, Bill, thank you as always for joining us, and have a wonderful week. And if you find out any documents or any information about the leaker, please let me know.
I will. You will be the first to know, Silvio, because I know they're going to call me.
Yes. Well, you call me, and I promise to say that the information came from a valuable source.
Yes, an informed source, absolutely. Talk to you next week. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Thank you so much, Bill. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots to get into today. Lots happening in the country. That's all I can say. Have a wonderful day, everybody.